From the WXXI studios, this is Backstage Pass. I'm Julia Figueres. 9.5 years ago, tenor Gregory Kundi and soprano Linda Wojciechowski did our first ever holiday Backstage Pass. At the time, they had a chorus here while he was also building an opera career, mostly in Europe. A few years later, Gregory's career took off like a shot, and he's become one of Europe's leading tenors, garnering awards and singing roles he'd never sung before. Today on Backstage Pass, Gregory and Linda return to our studios to sing, to talk about this overnight success that was years in the making, and how their lives have changed. The sweet sound of success next on WXXI. Welcome to Backstage Pass. I'm Julia Figueres with Gregory Kundi and Linda Wojciechowski joining me today. It's been 9.5 years. Anything changed?
Well, we're still married. We're still living in Rochester, Penfield.
Well, there you go. I guess we can all go home now.
Yeah. Excellent. Absolutely.
So you bring up you're still living in Rochester. You perform all over the world. But why Rochester?
Well, when I met Linda back in 1986 at Chautauqua, New York, we started our courtship there, and her parents were from Rochester, lived in Rochester, and when we made the decision to get married, we were going to travel together, which we did. We did quite a lot, traveling together all the time, and it was a natural choice to make our home where her parents were and could kind of look over our place while we were gone, and always a place to come home to where you'd have family. So
Linda, you met Greg in Chautauqua. Was it love at first sight?
Hardly.
No. Really? No. No.
Annoyance at first sight, you might say.
No, we had a bit to do together. I was an apprentice at Chautauqua, and we were doing Daughter of the Regiment, and the overture was staged. And so Greg was singing Tonio, and he was trying to,
escaping something.
You were AWOL, yeah. Right?
Exactly.
And so I was playing a nun in the village, and there were a group of us nuns walking, and Greg was to grab my habit and then sneak in behind the nuns. So we had to learn how to work all that out.
I'm not quite sure how your habit could possibly fit him.
I don't know, but
that was the bit.
That's how it worked.
So you are having this remarkable career, but it's not what you envisioned when you went off to college.
Oh my goodness. Well, no. When I went off to college, I was going to be a music teacher, a choral conductor, which all the rest of my roommates from college became and still are. They're sort of retiring as the years go by now. But no, I just kind of happened into a great voice teacher who introduced me to some competitions. I became hooked on opera when I was on a Madrigal tour with my college Madrigal group. And someone dragged me to the opera, and I became interested in it, and there you are. It started from there and got into a nice apprentice program at the Lyric Opera, and as they say, the rest is history.
But what opera was it that turned your head around?
Zalome.
Was it?
And ironically, it was the first opera, my first professional gig was in the opera Zalome. I was the second Nazarene in this 1978 production of Chicago Lyric Opera's Zalome. Grace Bumbry in the title role.
That's quite a change from conductor to international
yeah,
stage.
It took a while to get there, but we've gone through quite a few phases in this career. You know, you start out in that era, you know, in the late 70s, 80s, the bel canto repertoire didn't really exist in the United States. So us tenors really sang all of the lyric tenor repertoire. Rodolfo in La Boheme, Pinkerton, Madame Butterfly, Traviata, Rigoletto. You know, things like Puritani didn't really exist, or some of the serious Rossini operas that we know today. So I sort of got into that in the early 90s, and that therefore the whole repertoire changed again to bel canto. And I did that until 2006, started to feel a little bit of a change in the voice and had a choice to make, stop or change your repertoire. And thought more about stopping than changing repertoire because it never even crossed my mind that that could even happen. But I was encouraged by quite a few people, agents, conductors, and the general directors in Europe, saying, you know, give it a shot. You know, why? What do you have to lose? And I said, okay. And I started. 2011 was really the turning point when I sang Vespri Siciliani in Turin with Gian Andrea Nozeda. He encouraged me to do it, and it went very well. It was broadcast on television live, and the Italians who had read the name in the program saying, that's not the Gregory Quimby that we know. It's got to be somebody else. It's got to be his relative or something. He's not singing Verdi. It's impossible. But it indeed was me, and things just lit up after that. A complete change in repertoire. So all the bel canto things, not all of them, but many of them went along the wayside, and I don't really do Rossini anymore. But
do you miss it?
I do. I do sometimes. So I like to get back to it every once in a while.
Well, let's get to some music, and let's hear this singing we're going to be hearing from each of you, actually. And we'll begin with a little Puccini from Tosca with Gregory Quimby, followed by a little La Bohème from Puccini with Linda Wojciechowski. You're listening to Classical 91.5. This is Backstage Pass.
Belle forme di chant.
Two Puccini arias sung for us on Classical 91.5 by Linda Wojciechowski. Now, she was sang the La Bohème, Quando Mimpo. And before that, E Lucevan la Stella from Tosca, sung by Gregory Kundi, her husband. As Gregory was going through these changes in his voice, Linda, could you hear it? Could you hear what was happening as his voice was changing from this bel canto place?
A little bit, but you know, Greg had taken on some of the more dramatic Rossini roles, so that was a great bridge and a great segue, and sang also a lot of Berlioz at the time, so it was a natural progression. So even though you could hear the change, I could hear the change, I don't think that the public was entirely aware of that, because he was negotiating it so well, so that by the time you were ready to sing, by the time Greg was singing Verdi, I think, you know, it had come into full bloom, and I think that it was a great transition period. You know, it went very well. I could hear it a little bit, but I have to admit, I do miss Rossini, so...
There you go. I asked, he wouldn't admit to it, so I'm glad you have.
Yeah, I really do. There are some things that I really, yeah.
You can't really help but miss, you know, the thing that brought you so much joy. I mean, I really started singing Rossini in 92, and I guess my last Otello of Rossini was last year. So, you know, that's a lot of years singing this one composer and making it really your signature. And he's, you know, he's always in my heart. And we lost Maestro Alberto Zedda just this past few months ago. And Maestro was my mentor in this music, and we'd worked together many, many times. And I feel a great loss. You know, first of all, you stop singing the repertoire, and now you've lost the mentor in that repertoire. It's really, it was very sad for me. I cried for a day. It was unbelievable. He meant a lot to me, so.
And today it was just announced that Jeffrey Tate passed away.
Yes.
Did you work with him?
I did. I was fortunate to reopen the San Carlo Theater in Napoli with La Clemenza di Tito. and got to be under his baton. And he was a wonderful man and a wonderful Mozart specialist. It's hard to. Neville Marriner may have been another great Mozart conductor, but Geoffrey was one of the greatest. And just a wonderful man. I mean, with his disability, you didn't know it. When he was in the pit, you had no idea there was anything wrong with him.
I should say that Geoffrey Tate had spina bifida.
Yeah. Of course, it never affected his speech, and it certainly did not affect his conducting abilities. It was really amazing to watch him rehearse as well. You know, just incredibly respect for Maestro Tate, and he'll be sorely missed.
Linda, we should talk about you for a little bit. You know, we'll talk about him forever, but let's talk about you for a minute or two. You were a voice teacher, or voice student, rather, at the Eastman School of Music?
At Eastman, mm-hmm. I started there. I actually transferred there into my undergrad degree, my undergrad program as a sophomore. I was at Holy Cross for a year, and Greg's probably sick of hearing the story, but I auditioned for the choir at Holy Cross, and I had no aspirations and no intention of pursuing music. I had sung at Mercy, high school.
What were you pursuing?
I was an English economics major, and I was going to be a lawyer, but I auditioned for the choir, and the choir director closed the door after I finished singing. I mean, I just sang a few scales, and he said, "What are you doing here?" And I said, "What do you mean?" Because I had really agonized over this decision, and perhaps that's why, because I really wasn't settled on what I wanted to study. And he said, "You have to go study music." And I thought, oh my gosh, now I have to like rethink everything all over again. But I did. By Christmas time that year, I was auditioning, and I auditioned at several schools, but I was very taken with Eastman. As soon as I walked in the door, I had a feeling, you know, at Kilbourne. And I had never really been there. I had never performed there, certainly. But I just had that feeling that I really wanted to be a part of that.
And you weren't just a straight music major. You were a double major.
I was a double degree person. I don't even think they don't offer that program anymore. I don't know. But it was too many hours. I was an English major and a voice major.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any concept when you graduated from the Eastman what you would do next?
No, I have to be honest, I didn't. But I went on to U of M to study voice performance. And I guess I thought probably at the time that I would attempt anyway to begin to pursue a performance career. But then I have to be honest, when I started to travel a little bit with Greg, I realized that I probably would not have the temperament for the work. So
you actually said you would be a really lousy musician because you don't take direction well.
Yeah, I would not want to have to put up with a lot of the politics that goes on. So
she's an excellent director, by the way. Anyway.
So let's hear the two of you sing together now.
Why not?
On Backstage Pass, our guests are Gregory Cooney and Linda Wojciechowski, and they're going to sing a duet from Otello, Ginella Notte Densa.
Tuoni la guerra e dire del mio destino.
A duet from Verdi's Otello, Cianella Notte Danza, with the soprano role, sung by Lena Wojciechowski, and the tenor, Gregory Quindy. And I need to give some props to a wonderful pianist today. Priscilla Yuen is our accompanist on Backstage Pass. Gregory and Linda are joining us today to talk opera and much more. This change that happened has been referred to as the Quindy Renaissance. And all I could think of is, man, that had to have been a lot of work, because you had a whole set of roles that you could do, and suddenly you're faced with a whole new set of roles that you've never done before.
Yeah, well, who decided that? Who is the crazy person that decided he was going to do that? Yeah, and it is. It is really, it's really tough, because now, you know, at age now 63, but when I decided to do this at age 57, everything's new. And it's not, well, I'm going to say a couple of operas I had heard, of course, and maybe had sung a compromario role in. For example, Otello. I sang Cassio in four productions. So I knew the opera. But most of these things I had never even heard before. I never had time. I was not in that world of the lirico spinto tenor, or even in that genre of music, you know? Singing bel canto took up all of my time. So, yes, and everything is new. Even when I repeat things now, I have what I have all my words on 3x5 cards. And so I can I have a little library. I put it in my back pocket so I can refer to the words as I go along. So you have 2 weeks or 3 weeks of rehearsal periods with cards in hand, so you don't forget your words. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. I thank God I had a good musical training because I feel I can learn roles rather quickly. But it's a really interesting experience also because the voice 20 years ago, you know, you'd always experiment when you were singing by yourself and you make these big sounds like Corelli and John Vickers and things. And then you went, oh, my goodness, I better not do that. I'm going to hurt myself. And so I was always very careful. And then when you get to this part and they say, well, okay, you should try it. Okay, whatever. Well, let's give it a shot. If it doesn't work, I had a great career. If it does work, then we'll keep going. And it's going well.
So you've added Peter Grimes, for example. When you were young, frivolous bel canto kind of tenor, did you ever think, yeah, I can do Peter Grimes?
Never. No, and this is the whole point for me. I was discouraged by people to not even think about it. You know, you're singing Alma Viva in Barbiere di Siviglia, or you're singing, Nemorino in Le Desire d'Amore. Don't even think about this is where you are. You're the Alfredo Kraus model. You should stay right where he stayed. And it's wonderful to dream about it, but it's not going to happen. And always had in the back of my mind what Alfredo told me when I was 25. Your voice won't settle until you're about 50 or 55 years old. And, when you're 25, you think, will I even last that long? Are you kidding me? But it was in fact true. You really know where the voice is lying. I mean, it's true for Linda as well. I mean, she had an Ina voice, and her voice has expanded even with not really singing at all. The past 10 years with the chorale, she'd do solos with the chorale, the Gregory Kunde chorale. Little plug there. We're not in.
We'll get back to that.
Forming anyway.
We are.
But
going
anyway,
to get
no.
Back to
in
that.
In the past 10 years, her voice has expanded as well, and it happens. It's a natural thing. So. Anyway, we're happy, having fun.
So looking at down the line now, what are the new roles that you've never done before that are stacked up for you to do? What's your homework?
Yeah, exactly. I do Turandot for the first time in July in Israel with Israel Philharmonic in a concert form. So that'll be good, be able to use the music. And you're trying to put these roles into the repertoire. Turandot, I'm going to be doing Le Prophète of Meyerbeer. In Berlin, that's going to be in December. I'm doing Peter Grimes for the first time on stage in Valencia next February. What else? Oh, goodness. I think that's enough for now. Three more in 1 year. And we're adding about three or four per year.
It feels to me like there's so much work. How long does it take you, Greg, to really feel like, okay, I can put this on the stage now?
Well, I'd like to. Hopefully, I know about it a year before, a year and a half before. So I start once I'm asked to do it. I look through it and I see if it's possible for me to do. I don't say yes to everything, but when I decide that that's okay, yeah, I'll put it in. I put it on my iPad in the app called Fourscore, so I can always refer to it. I don't have to bring the book with me all the time. So I'm looking through it. A lot, and here and there I have a minute or two and I'll look through a few pages and, try and familiarize myself with the opera. But once we get into rehearsals, hopefully it's in the voice and it's for me, it's never memorized until I start rehearsing. That's why I have the cards. I need to put it on its feet before it gets memorized. And then it usually takes me about 10 days. Well, to actually memorize it from, sort of like an actor, you're on book for a while.
Right.
I'm on cards for a while, and then I'm good.
So let's hear Linda sing. And I'll come back. When we come back, Linda, we'll talk to you about the audience side of watching this happen. This is Backstage Pass with Gregory Kunde and with Linda Wojciechowski. And when I saw this on the list today on your repertoire, It's been stuck in my head all day. So we will all just listen to this for the next 3 weeks as Linda Wojcicki sings I Could Have Danced All Night from My Fair Lady. This is Backstage Pass. Linda Wojcicki singing I Could Have Danced All Night from Lerner and Lowe's My Fair Lady. And I love watching that. I love watching you sing. But you know what I really love? Really love watching you, Greg, as she sings. I love watching you watch your wife perform. But, you know, watching you watch Greg is also very special. When Linda is singing, you're kind of conducting, and this takes us to something that you mentioned before, which is the Gregory Cundy Chorale. And how long did you have the chorale going?
We started it in 1000.
The year 1000.
Yeah, 1033. We had it for 1,000 years. No, 1999. We began, and we had it for 13 years. Yeah. And it was unfortunately it got too much for me. I'm just never there to do any rehearsals. So Priscilla actually played for us a couple of times, and we had a lot of fun. I just had a really wonderful time. But the brains and the power behind the throne, I just waved my arms. But the brains and the power behind the throne was Linda. It was her baby. She really ran the whole thing and did the publicity and put all the concerts together, and it was an incredible job that she did.
And you were running rehearsals sometimes as well, right, Linda?
Mm-hmm. But we were very fortunate. We had many, many excellent choral conducting students. We had DMA, you know, the doctoral candidates from Eastman, as our assistant conductor. So while Greg was away for much of the year, and in any given season, we had someone, you know, helping us through, learn the music.
They were responsible for running, warming up the chorale when I was there, and running rehearsals when I was not there. And they always had an opportunity to conduct at least one major thing on the concert. So how many assistants? We had like 5 assistants altogether.
Yeah.
And it was always a great experience for them because they did get a chance to rehearse with the orchestra, teach the orchestra the piece that they were going to conduct, and conduct it on the concert. I thought that was important for, if they're going to do most of the groundwork for me, they should have an opportunity to actually be on the concert. As a matter of fact, there was one concert that I had to be called away for. I had to go to Barcelona, and Malcolm Meriwether, who now is in New York City with the Desoff Choirs, he's the conductor for the Desoff Choirs in New York. He actually had to take over the concert and do the concert by himself, which was great. It was fantastic. So I was very fortunate.
Does it come back? Is there going to come a point where you think that the Gregory Kündig Chorale needs to be reconstituted?
Well, we keep talking about it. We actually, I'll let out a little secret. Every Christmas, we call them the usual suspects. There's usually about 10 or 12 people that get together, and we go Christmas caroling. And we carol at people's homes that need caroling. When we get together before we go out caroling, everybody has a place that they have to go, that these are people who have struggled during the year, who have had a loss in the family or something like this, who really need some uplift time. So we visit them and carol at their
we
doors.
We think we're helping.
Yeah,
we're
we
not
hope.
Sure. We hope we're helping.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
I assume it's not Frosty the Snowman?
No, it's called improvised caroling, and we always have four-part harmony, and we kind of improvise. It's fun. It's a lot of fun.
You've done orchestral conducting. You've done choral conducting. It's at some point, this opera thing is not going to stay with us forever.
It's
going to
go away at some point. Yes.
Yeah. So is that?
Yeah,
I
think it's in the plans. I mean, I'm trying to, lay the groundwork. I haven't been able to do very much. There's really not a lot of time. With the chorale was great. It was a great experience, and it really taught me how to rehearse orchestra. I did a fully staged opera in the Donizetti Festival in his hometown of Bergamo, called Maria di Rohan, which you can find on DVD. My conducting debut in the pit, and it actually went very well. And I did a concert last year of Bel Canto selections in the Palau de les Arts in Valencia, which is Placido Domingo's center for perfezionamento of young singers. So we had a Bel Canto concert with orchestra, the Valencian orchestra, which is spectacular orchestra. And that was a lot of fun also. So getting little things here and there. But yeah, I see myself doing some things starting in the next few years, making time to do it.
But you are solidly booked for how long?
We're into 2020 now, so.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know why. they give me these opportunities. We'd like you for August of 2020. If I'm alive, I'm happy to be there. But it's a lot of. See, this is what's amazing. Most of our career, most of my 30 years, were. Don't want to say struggle, but we're always happy to get about 30 performances per year, and now I'm up to 60, and it's a big change because there's just a lot of demand out there, and thank God I turn down more work than I take. It's amazing.
And Linda, you and your daughter
Izzy?
Isabella,
yeah.
they you get in the plane.
We do.
You fly over.
We do.
You get to see all these new roles.
We do. It's very exciting. In fact, this in the last month, we went to Rome. We heard Greg sing André Chenier for the first time. Isabella loved the opera. That's a very different opera. And the texture is so thick and the orchestration is so lush. And we went to the first couple of...
You were at the dress and
we were at the dress
the premiere,
and then the premiere. And it's very arresting. It takes you, it really sweeps you up. It's wonderful music. Yeah. So it's exciting to see new roles and new productions. And these are all I like Rossini, but this is a whole different neighborhood, with all different, characters.
She bites her nails a lot more in these operas.
They're all new houses to tour.
Yes, yeah.
So
yeah.
Has Isabella figured out yet that this is not quite the normal way to grow up?
I think she knows that. Yeah.
Yes, I think
she does.
She does.
Yeah.
I mean, she's this like world traveler. She eats in these great restaurants. She goes to these incredible opera houses. She sees these extremely fabulous, fabulous operas. I mean, at some point,
and she met the king and queen of Spain last year.
She? She did. Yeah.
Was she well behaved? I hope.
Oh, always. I will say that she's very poised.
She's quite the opera goer. I mean, I know you're listening out there. She sat for her first opera when she was 18 months old. I am not kidding you. Semiramide at the Rossini Opera Festival.
It's true.
And her mother trained her through the whole rehearsal period.
I took her to rehearsals and I said, Izzy, listen, we have to be really quiet. Now, it's not a venue that lends itself to that because it's done in a basketball arena. So when they're rehearsing, it really looks like a basketball arena with a stage in the middle. So it's kind of hard to really buy into that. But I was very rigid with her, and I said, listen, we have to be quiet. And if you make any noise, we're going to have to leave. So she would, you know, eventually we would get to that moment. She would have to talk, and then we'd have to leave. Well, I did that half a dozen times, and then pretty soon she was ready to go.
And she sat in the audience for the premiere. Mm-hmm. It was unbelievable.
Like a little lady.
Good job, yeah. Mom.
Thanks.
All right. A little more music. This time, a little Bernstein. We're going to finish off the musical portion of Backstage Pass with Gregory Kundi and Linda Wojciechowski with a couple of songs from West Side Story. We'll begin with Maria, and we'll end with that fabulous duet. Tonight. You're listening to Backstage Pass. We are live from Studio E.
The most beautiful sound I ever heard. Maria, 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 Maria. All the beautiful sounds of the world in a single word. Maria, 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 Maria. I just met a girl named Maria, and suddenly that name never be the same to me. Maria, I just kissed a girl named Maria, and suddenly I found how wonderful a sound can be. Maria, say it loud and there's music playing. Say it soft and it's almost like praying. Maria, I'll never stop saying, Maria, 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 stop saying, Maria. The most beautiful sound I ever heard, Maria.
Two from West Side Story tonight, the duet, and before that, Maria with Linda Wojciechowski and Gregory Kundi, and playing the piano, Priscilla Nguyen. I love West Side Story. The thing that I think I love most about West Side Story, in many ways, the music is grand, but those words. Stephen Sondheim, boy, what magic, huh, Linda?
Yeah, so poetic. But very down to earth also, words that people use every day, you know, but put together in a way that is so beautiful and so moving, really.
The yeah. way the way he constructs, in fact, some of my favorite lyrics ever, when you're a jet all the way from
yeah.
your first cigarette
yeah.
to your last dying day.
Yeah.
Who writes like
yeah.
that?
It's great.
One of the best American operas ever written, right there.
So,
yes, we say it's musical theater, but it's an opera.
Hey, have
opera.
You ever done anything like, I don't know, Sweeney Todd or you know, like the musical type thing?
When I was in high school, when both of us, when we were both in high school, we did musical theater. That was what we did, you know. We certainly didn't do opera in high school, but I did Sound of Music. I was the Friedrich, the oldest boy, and I did Hello, Dolly. I was Barnaby in Hello, Dolly. And I also was in Oklahoma, did Curly in Oklahoma with this straight hair. Can you imagine? And, yeah, so that was my musical. Oh, I also did some things in college. Did Carousel in college. It was Mr. Snow in college in Carousel.
And two words that I need to put on the table, something else unusual you did. White Elephant?
White Elephant, baby. Yeah. All right. Yeah, that was my rock and roll band when I was in high school, yeah. And... we're trying to make a comeback, you know. It's like the 50th anniversary.
So it's a
right?
heavy metal band? Or?
No, no. We played Chicago covers, basically. We had horns. We had three trumpets, two trombones, had a keyboard player, two guitarists, bass player, and two drummers.
We had two drummers,
and that was magnificent. We'd play a lot of gigs. We played weddings every week, and, you know, enough for us to go to Denny's afterwards, and then the money was gone. You know, it was just a lot of fun. We had a really good time.
Did you have, like, the long hair?
I didn't. I was the nerd of the group. Yeah, I wore my glasses. I was the lead singer.
Do you have photos of these? Because this is something that used to
be. I don't know if we have any photos of that.
We have no photos.
Oh, you need to find some.
But I do have a CD that one of my band members made about a year and a half ago. It's sort of cleaned up digitally, and it's interesting to hear. It is.
Yeah.
So
Have you played it for Izzy yet?
No. She doesn't need to know. Oops, secret's out.
Oh, I'm sorry, I blew your cover. You'll never forgive me. Well, yeah. You've played like the world over, and I need to ask: is one audience tougher than the other? Like, what's the toughest audience that you've ever had to play?
Well, I'll let Linda tell this story. When we were first married, we took our honeymoon was actually in the south of France, in Provence. Because I was there working in Avignon, doing the opera Traviata. And Linda happened to be sitting in a box for the bows when I went out for my bows.
I didn't know what you were going
to
talk about.
Yeah, I had to remind you a little bit. Go ahead.
And what happened in the box?
I can't remember now. There was a gentleman sitting behind me, and he made some disparaging remark about Greg in French, you know.
Quel dommage.
I knew enough French to know that it wasn't nice. And I turned around and I said to him in my best French, "That's my husband, you know."
He was certainly embarrassed, yes. Yeah.
Was he really?
Yeah,
he was
really
a little bit. Yeah,
some of these people, these jerks, are unrepentant, if you know what I mean.
She was quite bold.
I was.
But no, the toughest audience, of course, the Italian audience. They are, because they are certainly more knowledgeable than any other audience in the world. It's their music. You know, most of it is their music. So, I've been at La Scala when...
And opening night is usually the coolest audience.
Yeah, it's the worst.
Yeah, they're reserving judgment.
Yeah.
Which is interesting, because you would think it would be that they would be very enthusiastic, right? And very, you know,
but they're
the
not.
Top.
Well, they're
not
enthusiastic,
not.
Maybe in a different way.
Yeah.
You've probably never heard boos like you hear in Italy. Booing, as you do in Italy. I remember a production that we did. This was in the Rossini Opera Festival. When the producer came out to take his bows for the production, it was very controversial production. And, I mean, the boos would have blown your hair back. It was really embarrassing. And, of course, the producers today, they love it.
Yeah,
we love it.
And you survived it all.
We did. We did. And we're still here to talk about it.
I want to thank you both for coming in for Backstage Pass today.
Our pleasure.
We have enjoyed
it.
Thank you, Julia.
Our executive producer and director is Gene Fisher. Our audio technician is Andrew Crutcher with help from Robert Braden. Our intern is Joshua Jarima. I'm your producer and host, Julia Figueres, with many thanks to Gregory Kundi and Linda Wojciechowski. Backstage Pass is a production of WXXI Public Broadcasting.
This is Classical 91.5 and 90.3.